Hello and welcome to the Albion Roar Down Under, sponsored by Pure Media. My name is Richard and I'm joined once again by the main man at Seagulls Down Under, Mr. Steve Longley. It's official, Brighton will be playing Premier League football next season thanks to a deserved 1-0 win over Manchester United. So, to celebrate this incredible feat, and as it's the last show of the season, we're supersizing our show. Joining myself and Steve in purring over the fantastic achievements this season, we have not just one or two guests. No, that's for Saturday lunchtimes. Here we bring you three guests to help bring the campaign to a joyous conclusion and leave you with a warm, fuzzy feeling inside. Later in the show, we'll be joined by BT Sport, Premier League TV and ESPN sports presenter and massive Albion fan Jules Breach. Steve also has some one-on-one time with none other than Ben Thatcher from Raw Blood, who tells us about trying to watch the Albion while on tour and tells us about the promo video for the release of the Yellow Away kit. But first, before all that, let's introduce our first guest. He is a former Brighton and Hove Albion striker who was part of the League One Championship winning side in 2011 and also played in the first league game at the brand new Amex Stadium against Doncaster Rovers. It's Matt Sparrow. How's it going?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Yeah, it's it's good to get on the show, yeah. Just have to pull you up on that one. I was a midfielder, was a striker in my younger days, but I was a midfielder back then for Brighton.
Okay, well, there goes my reconnaissance. Matt, so you're in Australia, you're in Perth. How did you end up there?
That's a good question. Well, I finished off at Lincoln City in my final year, 2015-16. And I got a call from my friend who was, he's living out in Perth the last few years. And he just said, how do you fancy coming to play out in Perth? I didn't really have to think twice about it, to be honest. You know, I thought I'd done my time in England, had a good few years there. So, I got onto the immigration and booked my flight a few months later. And here I am now.
And usually when people come over to Australia, they don't look back.
No, not many look back at all. I find it hard to believe. I've only spoke to maybe one or two that doesn't like it here. You know, I don't think there's anything to complain about. You know, there's never a grey, there's never a dark cloud at all. It's the weather's perfect. You know, the football's nice and laid back. That suits me now at my age. So, nothing to complain about.
What do you think about the standard in Australia, football-wise?
In Perth, I have to say the standard's not great, to be honest. You know, but I knew it wasn't going to be outstanding. But like I say, you know, I'm 36 now. It's it keeps me ticking along. It's definitely not as passionate as back in England. You know, there's bigger sports here that that people like to watch. But like you say, there's some good and bad players. Some fairly good teams, but yeah, overall it's well behind England.
So who are you playing for at the moment, and do you do a bit of coaching?
I'm player coach for a team called Joondalup at the moment, my second season with them. I'm just in the process of getting sponsored as a technical director role with them, so I've been waiting over a year for that now, so it's just a waiting game really. But you know, the season started and we haven't started as well as I would have liked, but we've got a young team and I'm just trying to pass on my experience really to a lot of them.
Looking back on your professional career, you spent 3 years at Brighton Hove Albion, am I right?
Yep, yeah, signed a three-year contract, yeah, under Gus Poyet, 2010-13, yeah.
And your first season was the promotion season from League One in 2011. Just give us an idea of what that season was like.
Well, I had 11 years at Scunthorpe United, and then I can remember I was on holiday on the beach, I think it was in Spain, and I got a phone call off Gus Poyet. So, I soon stopped what I was doing because I thought, is this a bit of a wind-up or what? So he's like, I'm really interested in bringing you in to replace Andrew Crofts. I think he moved on to Norwich that year. You know, so again, I didn't think twice. You know, I booked a flight, I think it's a couple of days later, and signed on the dotted line. So, that was a great start to me because I've got family that live in Eastbourne still.
All right.
Yeah, so, like you said, it's the last season at the Withdean as well, finishing, as champions on 95 points to pip Southampton that year. So, it was a fantastic season, really. And I'm lucky, enough to play with a lot of great players that year.
What was it like to play under Gus?
Arb, it was, you know, it was very impressive. He was such a, you know, tactical manager, knew everything about the opposition. He got the best out of you as a player. You know, for me, I've got no complaints. I thought, you know, he was a great manager.
And I've spoken to quite a few ex-Brighton players who have played at the Withdean. And when you came down to sign for Brighton, obviously you played at the Withdean before, but was it in the back of your mind that you were moving to the Amex the following season? So obviously you'd only have one season there.
Yeah, definitely, because we got promoted that year with Scunthorpe, so I was actually dropping down a league to play in League One. But I knew, like you say, there was moving into the, you know, into the Amex. Everything's, you know, moving forward. I didn't exactly love, you know, travelling down to Brighton to play at the Withdean back in the day. But like you say, it was we had a good team, a good manager, and you know, I really, you know, was looking forward to the challenge. And you know, I couldn't have asked for a better first season, to be honest. Like you say,
the atmosphere at the Withdean, a lot of players said it was quite unique because of the distance the fans were from the ground, obviously with the running track. Obviously, you get used to it, but how did you find the atmosphere?
It wasn't that bad, to be honest. You know, the fans really got behind you. I still think, you know, you got 7,000-8,000 fans there, and it's pretty full every home game. But like I say, it wasn't that appealing for the away fans, but you know, who cares about them when we're at home? But you know, especially when it rained, you know, when it rained and it's a bit windy. But you know, we was winning football matches, so we didn't really care about the atmosphere. You know, it might have been a different story if we was in a relegation battle, but like you say, it was a, you know, it was a great first season there.
It's interesting being a fan and looking over towards the away fans and not even being able to see them sometimes. When the fog sort of loomed into Withdean, all you could do was hear them, and then you could barely hear them anyway. You knew they were there somewhere, but I think when they put the seats into that hill, they put them really far away. Obviously, they didn't care too much.
Nah. It was, you know, like I say, it was a traditional old, you know, athletics football stadium. Yeah, my dad enjoyed it. He thought he quite liked, you know, the old-fashioned grounds, but... Mm. No, it soon changed his mind when he got a nice seat at the Amex the next season. So
what was your first experience of the Amex? So pre-season, coming for pre-season, was the Amex then open and did you get a little bit of a tour before the season started and you really sort of knuckled down?
Yeah, we got a nice tour. You know, every week I think we had the opportunity to go and have a look at it, the training facilities. You know, the change rooms and the pitch, and once you got a feel of it, you walked on the pitch, and even, you know, the stadium was empty when we looked around. It was, you know, still took your breath away, to be honest. You know, Brighton, you know, the last 10, 20 years, this is what they've been aiming for, you know, and finally, you know, they're in the big league now and playing in front of 30,000 fans. This is what, you know, the Brighton fans deserve, really.
And then when you stepped out for that first league game against Doncaster, now I know you played a friendly against Tottenham and that was a sellout, but walking out in that first league game, the atmosphere was absolutely electric.
It was, especially against one of my old rivals, because obviously Doncaster was a big rival with Scunthorpe back in the day. So I wanted to try and get one over on them. Obviously, Billy Sharp, I think he scored that day. He was a good mate of mine.
But like he always seemed to score against us, Billy Sharp. Good player.
He's always... box in the box, yeah. He's, you know, he doesn't do a lot, but as soon as he comes in the, you know, in the box, he's been a prolific, you know, poacher for years and years now, and he's, you know, fair play to him, he's still doing it now at a high level. But like you say, it was, you know, that day, I think, did Buckley get the winner?
Yeah, Will Buckley in the last minute.
Yeah, Buckers, you know, there's another guy, you had great pace, you know, sometimes he didn't believe in his ability, but, you know, we got the best out of him that year, and, you know, we luckily... You know, got the 3 points. That was a fantastic day all round.
And also in that team was a young centre back called Lewis Dunk. And look at him now.
I know. I've just noted down. I seen, you know, we had Lewis Dunk and Steve Cook, and we was just on, you know, in the reserves playing in the under 21s development squad. And I was thinking, you know, these boys have got a chance. But looking at them now, you know, Lewis is captained the team now, and Cookie obviously being captain at Bournemouth is, you know, unbelievable. Who would have thought that, to be honest?
So when you saw him as a youngster, when you played for the Albion, did you see the potential in him? Do you see potentially he could be playing in the Premier League?
I think you always see, he's definitely got potential. But the amount of players I've said, that guy's got potential, and, you know, they've ended up fizzling out. But I think it's very unique that Lewis has gone all the way, and, you know, he's in the Prem now. you know, maybe on the fringes of playing for England. You know, it's been a remarkable journey for him. You know, and he's just been, you know, fantastic really for every young player. Because I can remember he used to turn up late to training. He used to get fined week after week. So many chances under Gus, you know what I mean? He didn't take no, definitely take no hassle. But yeah, that obviously done him good, and he's stuck at it, and he's, you know, he's reaping his rewards now.
That's interesting you say that, because he did have a bit of a, not that that's linked or anything, but he did have a bit of a disciplinary issue for a few seasons, you know, getting booked a lot, sent off. But under Chris Hughton, he seems to have thrived, and not one red card this season, only a handful of bookings. I don't think he's been suspended. He's really come on.
Yeah, as he seems to have matured as a player, yeah, definitely. Like you say, I think Chris has definitely brought the best out of him and every other player in the squad now. Like I say, Glenn Murray is another one. He was definitely wouldn't have picked him in my five-a-side team when we had him, but as soon as he crossed that white line, he was a different man. You know, he could hold it up, he was great in the air, and like I say, he could finish. He's another one that surprised me, but he's gone on to, you know, to do wonders, really.
I think Glenn Murray's surprised everyone this season. He's been absolutely incredible. And I think what he actually needed was us to bring in two strikers in January for them to just sit on the bench while he goes and, you know, racks up 11 goals.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, he's had a great season. There's, you know, moving people tipping him to play for England. But, yeah, I think he's missed a couple of penalties as well, has he? But, to reach double figures is, you know, it's been a great season for him as well.
Exactly. Just bring Steve in. Do you remember the Doncaster game?
I do indeed, yeah. I think we watched it on a dodgy stream, didn't we?
I think we had to back then. what an amazing game, especially against Doncaster, you know, last opponents at the Goldstone, and to get them in the first game of the Amex and to win in such dramatic style.
Oh, it was a brilliant day, wasn't it? I mean, all the flags before the game and everything else, it was all built up, and then you thought, oh, it's going to go pear-shaped for us. And of course, Will Buckley comes on, the £1 million signing, and does the business for us, two goals.
Oh, it was incredible. You just couldn't write that script. So, Matt, you spent 3 years at Brighton, and then you went on to Crawley Town. How did that come about?
The third season come along with Brighton, and Gus made it clear that I wasn't in his plans that year. So Richie Barker come calling in January transfer window, said wanted to come and get some games down here. So obviously it's 20 minutes from my house. So I thought, why not? I need to get some games to try and get a move again in the summer. So I got paid up at the Albion and moved, you know, 20 minutes up the road and played for Crawley for the last 20 odd games of the season. Then he offered me a deal at the end of the season for 2 year deal. But I turned that down to come back to go back up north to sign for Brian Laws at Scunthorpe United.
Was that an emotional return, considering you've spent the best part of your career there?
Yeah, it was. It was, to be honest, and he was a key factor because I played with him, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s as well. So, I went back signed for him as well as the team. But yeah, it was you know, definitely emotional to turn out again for them. Yeah.
So, do you keep up to date with your previous teams that you played with, specifically Brighton?
Yeah, Brighton, Scunthorpe, Lincoln, all of them, really, yeah. Yep. Oh, they've all had great seasons so far, yeah. Scunthorpe, Lincoln in the playoffs, obviously Brighton 14th and safe, yeah. It's been a good year all round.
Have Brighton surprised you this season with, you know, not really, well, we haven't been in the relegation zone.
Yeah, they've just kept themselves out of it, really. Yeah, the home form's been terrific. Obviously, 7 or 8 wins at home and only 4 defeats. A couple of wins along the way away, but that's probably something you'd like to try and, you know, do better next season. But, you know, like you say, they've reached a magic number of 37, 40 points. And, you know, if it had gone into then a relegation battle, you know, going to... Was it Manchester? Who did the play last game?
Man City today, actually.
Yeah. Man City, and then going to Anfield. They wouldn't have fancied that, if they're struggling. But now that's the end, 40 points, and now I think they're probably in holiday mode, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. I was surprised Chris didn't play any squad players today, actually. He went out with his strongest team, decided to play Leo Ijoa up front, and scored a goal. Steve, what did you make of the game today?
Oh, I think it was almost like... Touré's testimonial, wasn't it?
Yeah, it seemed all to be all about him.
Yeah, it was sort of played at testimonial pace, and it was, I mean, it's the end of the season. We've done what we had to do, and I don't know if they're in holiday mode as such, but I think they want to finish up as high as possible. But, you know, it's Man City at the end of the day. We didn't expect to get any points against them. And we go on to Anfield, and hopefully we can get maybe one more point.
Matt, at the beginning of the season, when you saw the Brighton squad and, you know, the Premiership was quite a daunting league, obviously, did you think Brighton would do as well as they've done? Or did you think, perhaps this will be one season, they'll be back in the Championship?
To be honest, I didn't really know what to expect because, you know, like the Premiership is such a, you know, a daunting league, anything can really happen. Like you said, the three teams that's gone up, they're all safe now. So who would have predicted that, really? But I know Chris Hughton's, you know, he's been a good manager, gets the best out of the players as, you know, as individually. But you know, he's stuck to basics, 4-4-2, or you know, hasn't tinkered too much. Been fairly good at the back, and like you say, they've had a goal scoring Glenn Murray, who's, you know, has reached double figures. So I think they've more than deserved, you know, there's, you know, the safety in the Premiership this season.
Definitely. Everyone talks about the togetherness of the club and how the club has been built on very strong foundations. Did you get a sense of that when you joined?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. You know, I think, you know, the chairman's a wise man. He knew where the club wanted to go. You know, it's a well-run business. You know, there's a lot of players, you know, exiting and coming in at the time I was there. So, you know, it's all set up, and hopefully, they always say the second season's, you know, the hardest, you know, time to try and stay in the Premiership. But, you know, I think if he adds a couple more additions, I don't see why they can't aim for, you know, a top half finish. But like we say, it's the hardest league in the world.
Yeah, I mean, that's the object of the game, isn't it? To stay in that division. And we, you know, we would have taken 17th at the start of the season, and we've excelled and gone past that, really. But it was all about staying in that division, no matter what happened, even if we stayed up on goal difference. So we've done that, and now we've just got to build on it for next season. And as Matt was saying, you know, I've read plenty of articles about the second season in the Premier League, and he's right. It is the second season in the Premier League. And, you know, you can go into it feeling, maybe sometimes clubs feel a bit too confident that they got the right to stay up, or, you know, you've still got to work it. It's, you know, and it is a work in progress. And hopefully a few more additions will add to the strength of the side, and we can, go two or three places better next season.
It's interesting listening to Chris Hughton. I think he made the point that you've got the top six, and then you've got the rest of the division. And in the what you would call the rest of the division, everyone's got a chance of beating everybody. And that's not to say you can't get a result against the top six, because obviously we beat Man United, we've beaten Arsenal. But it is also a league within a league, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, definitely. Like, say, you know, the top six is miles away from the rest, but you just got to look at the likes of, you know, Burnley. What an achievement. Mm. You know, they've done this season on a small budget as well. So why can't Brighton, you know, go and try and, you know, get into the top 10? But like you say, if the fans, you know, the fans expect, you know, a lot from the teams, maybe, you know, just have to have a little bit of a reality check, and next season will be the aim to stay up again, you know, to have, like Steve said, to have a couple of seasons in the Premiership and, you know, cement themselves, because, you know, can quickly, you know, escalate away from you. And look at, you know, Stoke and Swansea and West Brom, have they found out this season?
Mm. Steve, you, interesting point. You said maybe some of these clubs take their position in the Premier League for granted. Do you think that's potentially happened to West Brom, Stoke, maybe Southampton, Swansea, whichever one goes down?
I don't know if there's complacency, but I mean, there was a lot said about what went on at Stoke, you know, and a lot of it is the backroom staff type thing, you know, or the background of the club. I mean, what goes on behind the scenes
has a lot to do with what goes on the pitch. And if things aren't right behind the scenes, then things aren't going to be right on the pitch. And I think that was definitely the case with Stoke. And maybe West Brom as well, you know, swapping and changing managers. And if you've got a consistent sort of squad and you've got a manager who's, you know, going to be there for the long term and can do the job, then there's no reason why you can't stay up. But I think, you know, chopping and changing managers doesn't help the situation. And then, you know, if things go pear-shaped and people start calling for Chris's head, I don't think that's going to help the situation either. So we could quite easily, you know, fall into that category if we don't, you know, watch what we're doing.
Absolutely. That's an interesting point. Matt, as a former player, how unsettling is it for a team when you have an influx of managers coming and going?
Yeah, it can be. It depends if you're in the team or not at the time, I suppose.
Good point.
Players' point of view, but you know, some players like to see a new manager coming in, but you'd probably prefer a manager to be there, you know, longer, you know, than just having a short period. But you know, it's a results game now, and you know, if Brighton go on and lose 5 or 6 games on the bounce, you know, next season, then there are going to be fans that, you know, are they going to be, you know, throwing a few questions at, you know, at the board and the chairman. But that's part and parcel of football these days. It's a ruthless business, and it's all based on results, unfortunately.
It is very ruthless. And the other thing we have to look out for in the summer especially is, you know, potentially losing some of our best players. Will Lewis Dunk go? Will anyone come in for Pascal Gross? You know, can we get the right player in? It's almost, pre-season is so important these days. And it really sets the standard for how your season will go on from there.
Yeah, definitely. Like you say, pre-season, you like to see new players coming in. But if you look around and a couple of best players are leaving, then you know it doesn't bode too well. But every player has a price, unfortunately. And you know, if someone comes in and you know puts in a substantial bid for someone like Lewis Dunk or anyone really, then you know the club definitely have to consider it. But you'd like to try and keep your best players, but you know that doesn't happen always.
Absolutely. Okay, Matt, thanks for talking to us today on the Albion Roar Down Under. It was great to catch up.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Okay, that was Matt Sparrow. It was good to talk to him. So, Steve, you watched the game today, obviously. Yeah, and you say before it was a bit like a testimonial for Yaya Toure, but I was encouraged at the beginning of the game when I saw Claudio Bravo playing, and then even more encouraged when he helped us score our goal. That was quality.
Yeah, well, it was one of those games where it was just, you know what the good thing about it was? I wasn't nervous.
No, exactly, yeah.
There was no nerves, you know, you could just sit down, watch it and relax. And if we scored a goal, great. If we didn't, you know, we weren't expecting much against Man City. But it was just nice to sit down and just chill and watch the game and not feel too bad about losing 3-1.
Nah, you go, well, we didn't expect to win. I'll tell you what, I actually found myself, kind of concentrating on players' performance, if that makes sense. Sometimes you're sort of so engrossed in, you know, the tension of the game, you don't actually get a chance to analyse individual performances. And what I mean by that is players that kind of stand out. And I have to say, I thought Davey Proper was really good today. And also, it sort of made me realise how much we missed him over the 3 games. And that's no disrespect to Biram Kayal, because he did a great job filling in. And also, another thing was how important he has become to the team and the squad.
Yeah, and that's the same with Stevens, isn't it? And we talk about hanging on to players. I mean, that's a prime example there, isn't it? Hanging on to Dale Stevens.
Mm.
You know, we could quite easily have sold him to Burnley for $9 million and taken the cash.
Yeah.
But we've got to fill the spot again. So it's a juggling act for the chairman, for the manager. Do you take big bucks for certain players, or do you hang on to them knowing that you can't replace them, really, for the money that, you know, is going about today?
I also thought, and I'm not trying to wind you up here, I also thought Anthony Knockhart has seemed to come into his own over the last 2 games. It's almost just suddenly click with him. It's just a shame that it's, you know, there's one game of the season left. I just wondered if it had something to do with the fact that he had a really poor preseason, and I've just banged on about preseason being so important. Do you think that was anything to do with the fact that he, you know, he wasn't quite on form at the start or even the middle of the season?
My opinion, like I always say, but he just tries to do too much sometimes, and when it backfires on him, he starts to lose his cool a bit. If he just did the simple things, you know, I mean, Bruno's a prime example. Bruno does the simple things, and sometimes you've just got to do the basics, and the rest of it will take care of itself. And he is a skillful player, Knockhart. We know that. You know, he has got pace to burn, but sometimes he just takes it a bit too far, and you think, oh, I'll just release the ball a bit quicker.
Yeah. He was outstanding against Manchester United. And as Chris Hughton pointed out, it wasn't just what he did with the ball that was impressive. It's also what he did without the ball and for the team. He relieved an awful lot of pressure with some of his runs as well. And it was almost that break, he had been sent off against Everton, and that three-match break, maybe something, it almost did him a world of good, and he seems to have come back a different player.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they sat him down and had a chat with him.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe someone's had a word with him.
Yeah, because, you know, some of the things that, I mean, kicking the back of the chair when he got taken up against Arsenal was just unforgivable, really, you know. But he's one of those players that excites, and you need him on the pitch. And as you say, he relieves the pressure. He takes the ball away like Jose, you know. He gets the ball and he can run it up the other end of the pitch, and then it sort of relieved a lot of pressure. And you need those players, and you need that. You also need that, you know, up front as well. You know, you need a player with pace. You know, and I'm not knocking Murray because he's done exceptionally well, but I think there's going to come a time when we do need a pacey forward as well. You know, because Gross is quite slow.
Well, we've got one sitting on the bench.
Yeah, well, we did pay a lot of money for him, but. I don't quite know what's going on there.
I reckon that we brought him in injured. He's still trying to get accustomed to the game, still trying to get over his injury. Once he's had a pre-season, I just have a sneaking feeling he'll be our number one guy next season.
Yeah, we need to see more of him. I would have probably stuck him in the... I don't know if we could stick him in a development squad or give him some game time or something. But he just looks a bit rusty to me at the moment.
Oh, I'm surprised he didn't play today. I thought he might have given Jurgen Lacadia a go up top. But nice to see you, Joe, play and score, to be honest with you. But I just wonder against Liverpool whether he'll, you know, ring the changes and give some squad players a go. Okay, you're listening to the Albion Roar Down Under podcast, sponsored by Pure Media, the full-service video production company based here in Auckland. Visit www.pureproductions.co.nz for more information on how Pure can create a fully customised, crafted video for your business. Okay, guest number two. Steve had the opportunity to interview Ben Thatcher from Royal Blood and talk to him about being an Albion fan and also that promo video for the release of the Yellow Away kit.
Hello, Ben. Yeah, thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Now, you're over here on tour, so how's the tour going?
Yeah, it's going really well, thank you. We're really enjoying being down here in Australia, and we've been across to New Zealand as well, which has been fun. And yeah, we're playing shows that are our biggest shows to date out here in Australia. And yeah, it's going really well, thank you.
Right, let's get down to your Brighton history. So how long have you been watching the Albion for?
So I remember my dad taking me to the Goldstone Ground back when I was really, really small. I can't really remember, but I remember my mum's cousins would always come down. They were Swindon supporters, and so we'd watch the matches when Swindon were playing. And then I think I went to the Withdean maybe once or twice, but it all got kind of serious when the Amex was built, really, and that got the city and a lot of people really more involved with the club, and I got a season ticket there at the beginning of the Amex, and have had one ever since. But it's been an amazing to watch a club rise like that, and the promotion, you know, chase and all of that was so good, and then up to now where we've secured another year in the Premier League. It's amazing.
Yeah, certainly is. Now, we spoke last week to Johnny Cantor, and a few weeks before that, or a couple of months before that, to Norman Cook about the Wigan game last season.
Now, oh, yeah.
Wigan game, were you?
I was there, yeah. I brought my tour manager, actually, along to that one, who was a QPR fan. But, yeah, I brought him along, and he absolutely, yeah, it was just what an amazing game.
Very emotional game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was incredible.
Even watching from afar, it was very emotional. What was it like actually being there?
Absolutely incredible, yeah. It was... There's no words to describe how exciting that was.
Yeah, and have you managed to watch any games while you've been over here?
Yes, I've woken up early or gone through till the morning to see a few. The United game was a good one. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah. And did you watch this morning?
I didn't watch this morning, but it's kind of an expected result, I guess.
Yeah, it was a bit like the job's done. Let's just enjoy it. Mind you, I think, you know, there's a lot of teams that wouldn't compete with Man City at this stage of the season.
Yeah, they look so good.
Last year, you were in Sydney, and you walked out in the new away kit for this season. How did that come about?
So, yeah, there was... what happened? Knockhart did the whole team actually did the other one, didn't they, when we got the promotion, and they just asked me, the club came over to me and just asked me if I would like to do the away shirt, and I was actually out in Australia when on tour doing that, so yeah, it was a fun little video to do.
And did you do one the season before?
I'm not sure. I didn't do a promotional video for them. I think I might have worn... I always wear the shirts here and there, and there's always Albion fans who in the crowd who have all the flags and stuff, so I go into the crowd and sometimes grab them. I think at Glastonbury I had one or something like that.
Yeah, and have you seen many Albion shirts while you've been over here?
Because every gig.
Yeah.
Every gig.
Yeah. Well, a lot of those will be Seagulls Down Under members, because I have seen on through various social media forums people are going to your gigs. So.
Yeah.
And do you see many worldwide?
Yeah. I mean, everywhere. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Everywhere.
So what's been your favourite game so far this season?
I really enjoyed the Arsenal game.
Yeah?
When we beat them at home. That was a great game. I thought we played really well on that one as well.
And did you get to many away games this season?
I went to the Spurs game at the beginning of the season, which unfortunately we lost.
Who's been your standout player of the season? Obviously, Pascal Gross got player of the season, but... Have you got somebody else that you thought should have got that award?
I think it's fair that Gross got that, but I really think Glenn Murray has pulled it out of the bag this season for a player. He's kind of the underdog now. We've got all the new strikers in, and he's just shone through, I think, and scored some really important goals for us this season.
Yeah, he certainly has. And obviously, from an Australian point of view, how do you think Matt Ryan's played?
Oh, absolutely incredible. Yeah, what a signing, what a keeper. he's really saved us some points this season.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially the penalty save against Stoke.
Oh, unbelievable.
I think that just about wraps it up for me, actually, Ben.
Brilliant.
Thanks very much for your time.
My pleasure. Nice
thanks
one.
Very much, Ben.
Cheers.
So how was it interviewing Ben?
Yeah, no, it was good. Yeah, he's obviously well into the Albion. Obviously, as he said, his first game was at the Goldstone, so he's not just got into it. He's been following the Albion for quite a while.
And yeah, he's enjoyed his tour over here. He's looking forward to coming back again. He's selling out to on all his gigs, and he, as he said, he sees Brighton shirts, you know, at every gig he goes to now, which is pretty amazing, really.
Yeah, and he seems to wear his Brighton shirt to a lot of the gigs as well.
Yeah, as he was saying, and of course he released the away kit in Sydney last year.
Okay, this is the Albion Roar Down Under, sponsored by Pure Media. It's time for guest number three. Please welcome Jules Breach. How's it going?
Hey guys, I'm very good. How are you both?
Good, good, good. So it's your morning there.
Yeah, it is early morning here, so I'm assuming it's night time in Australia, which is very confusing because the Brighton Man City game was last night for me, but it was today for you guys.
It was this morning. I got up at 6 o'clock and I have two young boys who are a nightmare to get ready in the morning, and trying to watch a football match at the same time is incredibly hard. All I would say was there was no pressure on, so I could kind of relax and watch a little bit.
That's true. I've got to get used to this whole watching football in the middle of the night, early morning, for when I'm over with you guys in the summer, which will be, well, my summer, June, July, for the World Cup, which will be exciting.
Okay, so what are you doing for the World Cup then?
So I'm part of Optus's on-screen team for the FIFA World Cup 2018, which is so exciting. My first World Cup that I've ever worked on. And obviously being the biggest prize in football, it's amazing to be involved in it. And yeah, I'm going to be one of the hosts for Optus, and they've got the full rights to the whole of the World Cup in Australia. So it's the only place that you can watch every single game of the World Cup. And yeah, I'll be part of the team. So it should be really good fun. And I'll be based in Sydney for the whole 6 weeks of the tournament. So really excited.
So hold on a minute. Let me just tick these off. Holiday in Australia, yeah. Watching the entirety of the World Cup, getting paid for it. This isn't a job, surely.
I know. I did think that, because when I was originally contacted, I thought, oh, they're gonna send me to Russia. I'm gonna be like out there, or they'll maybe get me in London at a fan park or something. And then they're like, no, we're gonna get you to come to Sydney. I was like, what? I was like, this is the absolute dream. So yeah, can't wait.
Oh, that's awesome. And obviously, you know, supporting England, hoping they'll go all the way to the second round. I guess it'll be a little bit of a competition between who can do the worst out of Australia and England. The thing is, Australia have got an excuse. They've got a hard group.
That's true. I mean, England haven't got an easy group, though, with Belgium in their group. I think that they're going to be tough to beat. Obviously, they should get through. But yeah, how far they can go in the competition, I'm not sure. It all depends on who Gareth Southgate decides to take with him. And, you know, it's going to be classic England, isn't it? We're going to do well in the group stages, and then as soon as it gets to the knockouts, we'll probably fail miserably. But hey, I'm going to stay positive. I'm a glass half full kind of person. So I'm going to say we could potentially go quite far. Potentially.
So being over in Australia, are you going to be the go-to person to talk about Matty Ryan?
I guess so. I've watched a lot of him this season, being a Brighton fan, and I still live in Brighton. So when I can, I'm at the Amex. As long as I can get a ticket and as long as I'm not working, I'm usually there. So it's been such a good season, and he's impressed us so much, especially because last season in the Championship, David Stockdale was such a big part of our team, and he did so well and pretty much was one of the best players in our team last season. So when he sort of, there was a lot of speculation, wasn't there, at the end of last season as to whether he was going to stay, whether he was leaving, what was going on. I remember seeing Chris Hughton at an event in London and saying to him, it was just after we'd got promoted, but before the season had ended. And I said to him, Chris, what's going on with David Stockdale? Can you tell me anything? Like, what's the situation here? And I've met David quite a few times, so I sent him a WhatsApp and I was like, mate, what's going on? Are you leaving? Are you staying? And he was like, I can't actually say. And I was like, oh God. And then obviously when the news kind of came that he was moving on, it was, yeah, I think we were all a bit worried. I'm sure I can speak for you guys as well, thinking who on earth is going to come in and be between the sticks for us. And then when Matty Ryan came in, if I'm honest, I didn't really know a lot about him. I'd never seen him play. And then the first game I watched him in was in pre-season friendlies. I was at the Amex for the Atletico Madrid game. And I just thought, even though we conceded, what was it? Three we conceded that day, wasn't it? I think I still thought he did really well, which sounds really silly considering he conceded three goals. But what I saw of him, I thought, actually, I quite like this guy. And he's just gone on from strength to strength throughout the season, and looks like he's loving being around the boys as well and being in Brighton, which is great. So hopefully another good season for him pushing on for next year.
I've got a theory about David Stockdale. When he was introduced at the end of the season celebration on Hove Lawns, the fact that Dale Stevens had everybody was cheering, yes, he's come on his own, he signed a four-year contract, and you would have thought with the impact that David Stockdale had over that season, and I'm not just talking about as a player, behind the scenes with the club, with the charity work he did, he was a big part of all that. But the fact that he didn't get his own introduction on the stage, when he was introduced, he came on quite sheepishly. And I think from that point, I thought, yeah, he's off. However, with Matty Ryan coming on, he has kind of brought that as well, the personality into the club as well. Obviously, he's a great player and he's played very well, but he's also a big personality in the club. And I absolutely love what he does with the fans after the game.
Yeah, definitely. And the way he is on social media, that goes a long way. I mean, I obviously see the way he kind of like addresses the fans, the way he speaks to them, the way he replies to tweets. And I think that he's become a massive fan favourite. So he's definitely loved by all of us here in Brighton, for sure.
And any goalkeeper who runs the length of the field to celebrate with the team, that's good in my book.
Absolutely.
Steve, we talked about Matty Ryan a lot over the course of this season, but now the season is coming to a close. How important do you think he's been?
Oh, very important. I mean, we just touched on it earlier, you know, the penalty save against Stoke and, you know, some of the other saves, the double save, the clearance off the line last week when he was on his back.
Oh, that was incredible when he scooped it. He sort of scooped it off the line.
Yeah, I was live on air at the time and on BT Sport, which is one of the other shows I do on a Saturday where we watch all the games at 3 o'clock. And obviously the pundits go through everything. And I was watching that and I was thinking, how on earth has he just done that? It was incredible, absolutely incredible. And I just thought at that point, that could be one of the saves of the season that could definitely keep us up. So, yeah, amazing.
Just interestingly, so when obviously that was a very important game, and when you're kind of watching it for work, do you have to kind of keep your composure a little bit? I mean, come on, that was such an important game for us. You must have got carried away.
Yeah, it's quite hard, I'm not going to lie. And when Brighton aren't playing at 3 o'clock, it's kind of a relief for me because I'm like, okay, I can actually do my job properly today. it is really hard, but obviously the nature of the show, the fact that, you know, all the guests that are on the show are all football fans as well. You've all got your allegiances to clubs, to players, to teams. And naturally, you're going to have those reactions when something great or when something terrible happens. And it all adds to the show. So to be honest, they let me, it's obvious. Everyone knows I'm a Brighton fan. So whenever Brighton are playing and, you know, we concede or we score a goal, the camera always comes to me and like just to get my reaction. So it's become a bit of a thing throughout the season. One of the kind of funniest things that happened this year on the show when Brighton were playing at 3 o'clock was Glenn Murray scored a goal in the first half and it got to half time and they were showing some of the replays and I clearly just wasn't thinking straight and I was just drifting off. I don't know what I was thinking about. And out the corner of my eye, I saw like this build-up play going towards goal and I thought, oh my God, we're going to score here. And Glenn Murray puts the ball in the back of the net and I celebrated like it was another goal, but it was actually a replay and it was all live on telly and all of the pundits were just cracking up. They were like, Jules, are you all right over there? And I was like, sorry, I don't know what was going on, but basically celebrated Glenn Murray's goal twice, even though I clearly knew it was half time. It was quite embarrassing, to be honest.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
Oh, dear.
But I think Glenn Murray, he's had an unbelievable season. You know, we talk about his age and his experience. And I said earlier in the show, I think he came alive when we brought in two strikers in January.
Yeah, I know. It's funny, that, isn't it, how that works? The thing with Glenn Murray is that last season, when we got promoted, I think everyone was a bit worried. Everyone was like, can he do it in the Premier League? Is he going to be able to score enough goals? And I think that most Brighton fans would have probably thought that he couldn't. And the fact that he's proved us all wrong is says a lot about his character, to be fair, doesn't it? But, I mean, I think that the striker situation at Brighton, it does still need to improve. I mean, what is it, 12 goals that he scored this season, which is more than I think maybe we'd have expected him to score. But let's not take anything away from him. He scored more goals than Chelsea's front man, who they started with this season, Morata, who obviously has had a bit of a terrible season. But when you compare it to that, at the start of the season, who's going to get more goals, Glenn Murray or Alvaro Morata? You would have never put any money on Glenn Murray scoring more goals than him. So as much as, 12 goals is good, it's not fantastic. I do still think that we need to improve on that for next season if we want to stay in the Premier League again. However, I'm not taking anything away from Glenn. He's been absolutely brilliant, and he's offered something different to, I think, what a lot of other Premier League teams have. You know, you don't see many other teams with that kind of big target man up front anymore. So the fact that Glenn has kind of proved that that works in the Premier League has been really good to watch.
It's interesting you say that. I mean, he's almost an old school striker. He obviously doesn't just score goals, he holds the ball up. What's impressed me the most is the way he's been holding the ball up for the team to try and relieve some of the pressure against some of these big teams. I have to say, against Manchester United, his old trick of backing into the defender and falling over didn't work, unfortunately. But he's been so important to the team just for his hold-up play. The flick headers he gets from clearances from either the goalkeeper or the back four, so, so important. And a striker really needs to do that, especially when we're under the cosh for all that time. But I think also, like, you know, we talk about old-school striker. We've got an old-school two centre-halves. I was listening to Lewis Dunk on the radio the other day, and you know, he is really an old school. Pundits were saying he's a really old school defender who just gets blocks in, puts his head anywhere. There was that one chance, I can't remember who took a shot, but they pile-drived it and he just put his head in the way. And they asked him on the radio, said, did that hurt? And he went, yeah, it hurt, but you just got to do it. You know, I mean, it's like Tony Adams, isn't it? That sort of thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Him and Duffy have been brilliant. I mean, we knew they would be. I think going into the season, everyone was saying, you know, they've got a really strong centre-back pairing and, you know, they Brighton are going to defend well throughout the season. And it's exactly what they've done. Obviously, I think Dunkey will want to forget those own goals he scored and kind of equaling that record. Actually, did he break the record of own goals in a season or has he just equaled?
I think he equaled. Isn't it Martin Skirtle?
Yeah.
I think it's Martin Skirtle.
Yeah, that was it. So I think he'll want to forget that. But, you know, he managed to cancel one of those out with a goal, a very important goal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that him and Duffy have been great this season. They'd have liked to have conceded less, of course, and particularly from set pieces is where we've really struggled. And I think that's one of the key areas that I think Chris and the team really need to work on for next season, because teams are just going to continue to exploit that when they play against us, knowing that we're weak defending from set pieces is kind of one of those areas that, if teams know that they can get us with that, then they're going to keep pushing that. So for next season, I think that's one of the areas we need to improve on. But I've still been impressed with Dunk and Duffy together. I still think they've had a good season.
Absolutely. And there's been a lot of talk about the new signings that we've brought in, and Chris Hughton's brought in or bought very well. We talked about Davy Proper a little bit earlier. I'm a massive Dale Stevens fan, as everyone who listens to the podcast knows. But Stevens and Proper in the midfield have been absolutely wonderful. And I think the ever-present record, bar Stevens getting injured and Proper with his red card, I think that is just testament to how well they've done.
Definitely. And you know what? You could really tell the difference when they weren't in the middle of the park together. I think the team they just don't look the same, do they? There was this kind of like sense of, well, definitely for me as a fan watching, this kind of sense of nervousness without them in there together. You could just tell that it was just not quite the same. I couldn't really put my finger on exactly what it was, but without them in there together, it definitely made a difference. So the fact that we can finish the season with them both playing back together is brilliant. And it really showed against United, didn't it?
It did. And even today, like I said this on the podcast earlier, that Davy Proper, I just noticed him being back. No disrespect to Biram Kiael, because he did a wonderful job. But just with Proper in there, he just brings something else. I think he's had a great season for us, especially his first in the Premier League.
Yeah, and he got a cheeky assist as well. I bet he's happy with that.
Yeah, good old Claudio. Okay, Jules, let's have a chat to you about being a Brighton fan. So you've been following the Albion for quite a while now. Can you remember your first game?
Do you know, I get asked this question quite a lot and I can't actually remember it, if I'm honest. I'd be lying if I said I could. I was born in Brighton and lived here for a couple of years when I was little and then moved away, came back, and it was really around then that I started following Seagulls. And I actually moved in with my cousins because my parents stayed in the Caribbean where I'd grown up. Mm-hmm. And it was quite hard to follow Brighton out there back in those days. It was in like the sort of 90s, and in the Caribbean you couldn't really get your sort of League One and Championship coverage out there, so it's quite difficult to follow them. And then when I came back, I moved in with my cousins, and they're all season ticket holders for the Albion, so there was always the odd occasion where they'd sort of drag me along to games when one of them couldn't make it. So that's when I'd been to the With Dean, but I couldn't tell you what my first game was. It's pretty much since the move to the Amex that I've been going a bit more regularly, and when I started working kind of with the club, I was working for my local radio station here in Brighton doing their sports show. So on that, we were sponsored by the Albion. And so we had quite good access to, you know, the players, the manager for interviews and getting to go to the games and doing live reports on the matches every single weekend. So it was then that I kind of became obsessed with everything Seagulls related. And yeah, so it's been quite an incredible journey, but probably not as much as you guys who've probably followed them for years and years and years, and especially from afar as well. It's quite impressive.
Well, Steve,
Hang on a second. I might look old, but I'm not that old.
It's experience. Sorry. Steve. That's what it is. Experience.
It is, exactly. So would you guys have been living out here when they were at the Goldstone, or not quite?
No, I've only been here 10 years.
Okay. But I take it you guys get to come back and like go to games every now and then?
Yeah, I mean, I've been back once, which is quite sad, and I managed to go to one game. So I've been to the Amex, and it's the one thing I'm sure Steve will feel the same. It's the one thing that I really miss about not being in England is not being able to go to live football. It does cushion the blow being able to watch every game, which I know you guys in the UK can't. Especially now we're in the Premier League. When we're in the Championship, we still got a fair amount of games. And Steve, you know, Steve was the go-to guy to get. He would show you how to watch games if you couldn't. Isn't that right, Steve?
Yeah.
Love that.
The dodgy way.
The dodgy one. Well, to be fair, you are lucky. You get sometimes because my mum and dad live abroad, they get access to all of Premier League TV as well. And my dad will say, oh, there's a game on today. And I'll be like, what? No, there isn't, Dad. Yeah, there is. Like, so-and-so playing. I'm like, what? That's not on telly here. So I think, amazingly, even though we're closer to the action here in England, we get to see less of it on TV. But then I guess that kind of encourages you to go and buy tickets and go out and watch the matches, which is what it's all about, really. So yeah,
absolutely. I think the other thing about being over here is you get used to watching football at daft o'clock. You know, you get into a routine of getting up. I mean, me being in Auckland, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, watching a game for a couple of hours and then trying to go back to sleep, but getting bashed on the head by my kids. And it's, you know, that, I mean, I've got used to that now, and I think it's almost become me time. This is my time to sit down, watch my team play. It really messes up your sleep patterns, but there is something quite unique about it.
It is. I mean, I was in Sydney only last week for a couple of meetings with the Optus team for the World Cup, and I was absolutely desperate to watch the Champions League game. So I got up at 4:30, I think it kicked off or something stupid, and I was like, what am I doing with my life? Sat in my hotel room, darkness, watching a football game. But yeah, it is what it is. And yeah, I kind of know what you mean, but I'm not quite used to it yet. So hopefully I will be by the end of the World Cup.
Oh, I think it's definitely going to be a fantastic experience. So how many games have you seen this season? You probably watched most of the games this season. How many games have you been to this season?
Oh, I've been to maybe 3 or 4 home games, and I've been to 2 away. I went to Bournemouth away and West Ham away.
West Ham away.
Amazing. Oh. Yeah, that was our first away win of the season, wasn't it? And that was the game that is Cuadrado scored his first goal of his now trademark goal. And it was just unbelievable. That night was incredible because, funny enough, I wasn't actually sat with the away fans. I had a press ticket for it because I knew the press officer at West Ham and he was like, right, I've got your ticket. So I was sat in the press area, but do you know what? I don't even care. I was celebrating anyway, even though I was in the technically in the home end. But it's just so hard. That night was just, it was amazing to get our first away win and in the manner that we did. I mean, West Ham were terrible, but we don't care. You know, won and it was a brilliant performance by us. So, yeah, it's been fun. It's been amazing to see Brighton in the Premier League. Unfortunately, I just haven't been able to go to as many games as I would have liked to because I've been working and it's difficult because when I then do have, say, a Sunday or a Monday off, I can't always get to a game because I'll have other things on. And the majority of our matches have been on a Saturday at 3 o'clock when I'm live on air watching them. So, I just remembered I did also go to Tottenham away. Unfortunately, I didn't go to Tottenham at home because that would have been nicer getting the draw. It's been amazing to see Brighton play against some of these huge teams, like watching them at Wembley when you've got Harry Kane and Heung-min Son and Christian Eriksen on the pitch at the same time as like our Brighton boys who we've been watching for years and years and years come through the ranks, especially, you know, the lads like Solly March who are still youngsters but are playing in the Premier League and just haven't looked out of place at all. And I think that's what's impressed me the most about us this season, and particularly the Man United game at the Amex last week. Watching Paul Pogba stand at the Amex was just the strangest thing ever. I was like, the most expensive player in the Premier League is at the Amex right now and we are playing him off the park. It was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Was that after Dale Stevens took him out of his pocket?
Yeah, must have been.
So Jules, pundits, who's your favourite?
Yes. Oh, that's hard. It depends what for, because they're all quite unique and different in their own way. Do you know who I've not worked with, who apparently is an amazing pundit, who I'm sure you've watched a lot of on Premier League TV, is Glenn Murray, is apparently an excellent pundit, but unfortunately I've not worked with him yet. But in terms of the shows I've done, my favourite pundits, Paul Ince is up there for me. He is just, he's an absolute legend, first of all, but he's hilarious to work with, really good fun behind the scenes. And because, I don't know if you guys knew this, but Tom Ince, his son, was actually linked with a move to Brighton last year.
Oh, yeah, and I do remember that, yep.
Paul was telling me prior to us getting promoted last year, he was telling me, oh, you know, I really want Tom to move to Brighton. You know, he's had a couple of, you know, he's met with the club a couple of times and I think it looks like it's going to happen. So when it fell through or didn't happen for whatever reason, I was like massively teasing him going, oh, you're going to regret that decision, da, 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 like all this stuff. So all of this year, there's been this massive rivalry between me and Paul Ince about Huddersfield and Brighton. And every single time he's on the show, he's always kind of giving me a bit of a dig or taking the mickey a little bit. And if Brighton concede, he'll give me this kind of look and give me a little wink or something. So yeah, he's one of my favourites to work with. He's been really good fun. But in terms of the ones that make me laugh the most, Dean Saunders and his ridiculous stories. I mean, the tangents he goes off on sometimes are just brilliant. And obviously being ex-Brighton as well, you know, he's got a little soft spot for Dino.
Has he got any Brighton stories?
Well, you know, there's the one where he had the team photo and his ding-dong was hanging out of his shorts. Have you seen that? Google it. It's brilliant. There's a picture of Dean in his Brighton kit and it's the team photo, so it's the whole squad.
Right.
And if you zoom in, Dean's sitting down and, yeah, he's just got a little bit of his manhood sneaking out of his shorts. I mean, to be fair, back in those days, the shorts were very short, weren't they? But yeah, that's quite amusing. And he said he had absolutely no idea that it was happening at the time. Clearly, otherwise he would have tucked it away. But do you know what? I'll have to ask him for some more Brighton stories next time I see him. I think I'm working with him this weekend, so I'll have to try and get some more.
As far as pundits go, from what we watch on the TV, a lot of pundits I mean, they said we would go down at the beginning of the season. However, a lot of them have said some really nice things about us this season, been really impressed. Everybody seems to absolutely love Chris Hughton, obviously, because he's a top guy, a top manager. But every pundit you listen to has nothing but praise for Chris Hughton.
They are obsessed with him, honestly. He is just, everyone says the same thing about Chris Hughton. The nicest guy in football. He deserves all the praise he gets. They hope that Brighton stick with him. And, you know, because Chris has been unlucky in the past when he's taken teams up to the Premier League or when he's managed in the Premier League before, it's kind of not really gone his way. So, yeah, I mean, there's absolutely no way that we would follow in their footsteps. Chris is absolutely seagulls through and through. But, the pundits at the start of the season, like you say, a lot of them were kind of, especially, you know, teasing me a little bit. Oh, Jules, get used to losing this season. Oh, you're going to get a lot of big beats this season and all that stuff. And it's just, I think everyone's been really impressed with the organisation, the way that Chris sets the team up, the discipline of the team. And yeah, a lot of praise to Chris Hughton. When he won the Manager of the Month award that month, was that February? I think it was.
I mean,
all of the pundits that I work with were just saying what a brilliant achievement that, you know, to keep Brighton in the Premier League this season is fantastic. And yeah, as a person, anyone that's ever met Chris will always say the same thing. He's just absolutely lovely, genuine, down to earth, normal, just a top bloke.
He just seems to be a perfect fit for the club. The way the club is now built on, and I said this earlier in the podcast, these foundations, starting at our chairman, going all the way through the club, the hashtag together. We have a manager who conducts himself with such dignity. It really is. I mean, it's the perfect club, isn't it?
It really is. And there's, like you say, there's just this really lovely team spirit that I think has kind of carried on from last season in the Championship. I know we didn't go on and win the Championship, which is a bit of a shame, but getting promoted the way we did and having such a stellar season last year, carrying that momentum through into this year, and that team spirit that you've kind of seen throughout the season, the guys just all look like they get on so well. And you can tell that there's a few like kind of really funny characters in the squad, and that kind of togetherness, and the way that the fans are so close to the players as well, and that the players are so down to earth. I mean, like after that Man United win last Friday, you saw a couple of the players just out clubbing in town in Brighton, where like I go drinking every weekend. It's just brilliant. I just love that. I think that there's a real good feel around the club at the moment. I mean, any team that comes to visit, any pundit that goes and works at the Amex, anyone that I work with that has been down to the Amex this season has all said the same thing. Just what a great club Brighton are, how lovely all the people are, how wonderful it is to come down to Brighton when it's a sunny day, and the facilities, the stadium, everything about the club from top to bottom is just run impeccably. And having Chris Hughton at the helm of that is just the best manager you could ever think of.
When you put it like that, it makes me quite sad to be all the way out here. Steve, do you feel
the same?
Well, as you know, I've been lucky enough to meet Chris. So, yeah, I mean, he made me feel really welcome at the club, and we had a long old chat about various things in Australia and football in Australia and other bits and pieces. But he is just a real genuine guy, you know. And I think that rubs off on a lot of the players. I mean, I was very fortunate and very lucky to speak to a lot of the players on that particular day, and they're all down to earth. But I think that's a thing that's been sort of bred into the club as well, because all the way down, you know, when you speak to Albion players, and I don't think you get that at other clubs. At other clubs, I don't know what it's like, you know, let's say Stoke, for instance, or Swansea, whether those players actually have that relationship with the fans like the Brighton players do. You know, you see it on social media, they're out in the street having photos taken with the fans, and, you know, I'm sure it does go on at other clubs, but it just seems to be, maybe, obviously, because we've been biased because we see all the Albion footage and stuff and social media. But I just think there's that togetherness has been brewing at the club for I think for 20 years, honestly.
Yeah.
And it's just from the last day at the Goldstone, or even from the Fans United day, I think it's just gradually sort of picked up, and it's just carried on. It's been carrying on for 20 years, and it's almost like, you know, it's almost like they sit the players down that sign on and say, right, here's the history of the club. You know, you need to be involved with the fans, and they are.
You are absolutely right as well, because there's a few ex-Brighton players that I've worked with on the various shows I do, including Wayne Bridge and Matt Upson and Robbie Savage, of course. And every single one of these guys that has previously played for Brighton in some way, even if it's been on loan or whatever it might be, have all said, oh, I loved it in Brighton, loved my time at the club, loved it there. And honestly, I've never heard a bad word said about any player I've worked with or come across that's played for the club.
Well, with Robbie Savage, it was just because he liked the nightlife.
Do you know what? Me and Rob have quite a few laughs. He told me a brilliant story about when he first signed for the Albion. It was when we were at the Wisden, of course, and he comes down in his flash car. And you know what the Wisden's like. You guys have been, haven't you? So yeah. You know there's, you know, it's a bit rubbish to park. Yeah, a bit rubbish to park around there. Not really a lot going on. Bit in the middle of nowhere. So in the residential area. So Robbie Savage drives down in his flash car. I think he said it was some white Mercedes or something. I can't remember what he said. But anyway, he comes down in his flash motor and he pulls up at the gates and the steward goes, sorry, mate, no parking today. And he goes, no, I'm one of the players. And he goes, sorry, mate, no parking today. And Robbie's like, no, mate, I've just signed for the club. And I was like, oh, Rob, that's absolutely hilarious. I can't remember what he said happened in the end. I think they let him in the end. But he had to park up on the curb on some little grassy mound or something. And I was like, that is not what you were used to, was it? But yeah. Very funny, very funny.
I remember when he first signed for us, I was actually quite excited because here we had a player with Premier League experience coming and playing for, you know, little old Brighton. And it never really happened for him at the Albion, I have to admit.
No.
I think, I don't know why that was. I think it was at Derby. Was he at Derby at the time?
Yeah, it was Derby.
Yeah.
And he was sort of coming to the end of his career, but yeah, it never really happened for him, which was a shame. I actually thought his first game he played pretty well, but yeah, from then on. But yeah, he seems like quite a funny guy.
Oh, he's very funny. He is exactly as you see him on the telly. Honestly, guys, he's exactly the same in person. There's absolutely no false pretenses with him. What you see is what you get. He's like a big kid, but he's so much fun to work with. People can say what they want about Rob, but he's a good laugh and he means well. He's the sort of guy who comes into work, you know, few suits around, you know, professional people, few people feeling a bit awkward because they're about to go on telly. Robbie Savage comes in like it's a dressing room. All right, guys, how's it going? And, you know, like, just like a big kid, but he brings a lot of energy and he's really good fun. And the good thing with Rob is he's got an opinion and he's not afraid to show it. So it's always good telly working with him because he'll always rub someone up the wrong way and, you know, get a little bit of a feisty argument going on, which is always good to watch.
Those are always the best pundits, I think, though. They're definitely the most watchable pundits, whether you like them or not, you know.
Yeah, well, we've got on BT Sport, Chris Sutton and Robbie Savage, and they're quite often at loggerheads together because they tend to disagree quite a bit, and it does make good telly. But you know, they're both similar in that sense that, you know, that they're not the sit on the fence kind of guys. So if they believe something, then they'll stick by it, even if they know they're going to get a bit of abuse on Twitter for it, because they, you know, 50% of the population might disagree, but they'd rather stick with their opinion and go with it because, you know, and to be honest, football's fun. Football's about opinions and kind of, you know, if you think something, say it. Who cares? You know, people might think, oh, you're wrong or that's not right. But, you know, I think that football is meant to be fun. And I know that Robbie and Chris are all about kind of having a bit of a laugh with it. And just, you know, if it riles a few people up, I think they quite like it.
If I didn't have the phone in my hand, Jules, I'd just applaud that last segment there. it is a game of opinions, and a lot of people, unfortunately, with social media, can't get that into their heads that, you know, people are entitled to an opinion. It doesn't mean, you know, that you, you know, if you're with social media, you know, if you're against that opinion, just don't say anything, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Or say something that's, you know, constructive. But there's too much of people aren't allowed to have opinions now. And we were talking about this, you know, a little while ago with a friend of mine over here. And we were saying, you know, the days when you used to walk away from the Goldstone and you'd walk underneath the tunnel, you know, down to the thing, and you'd hear people moaning, oh, why did the manager do that? What was that player thinking? Blah, blah, blah. Mm. And it would still carry on in the pub. Only nowadays, it carries on social media. So you're not just talking to your mates. You're talking to thousands of other people. And I think it just gets a bit out of hand, you know. And I always say on here, now, this is my opinion, you know.
Yeah.
And on our Facebook page, I allow people to have their opinion. And I don't, you know, go out there and shout it down. If I don't agree with it, I just don't say anything. But, you know, it'll be a sad day when you're not allowed to have an opinion about a certain player or manager or whatever goes on at a club or whatever. Because if that day comes, I'm going to buy myself a shack in the Outback. And
it's the crazy world we live in now, isn't it, with social media? Everyone's a pundit on social media, aren't they? Everyone thinks that they're right and they've got a say. And I love it. I just think, well, if that's how you feel, then fair enough. Have your say. And if I don't agree or if someone else doesn't agree, then make your point nicely and then crack on. Because it's just like, you know, whenever anyone talks about football, it just is a discussion. The reason we're all football fans is because we love watching football and we enjoy it. We enjoy the kind of togetherness of the fans and the rivalry between other fans and the fact that you've got this loyalty to a club and all of that. And it's just a bunch of fun, isn't it? So I hate when people take it too seriously.
One thing I would say, Steve, is there is one company or one TV show that like your opinion a lot, and that's the Fan Zone, because they keep trying to get you on.
Yeah, they do keep pestering me. In fact, they did text me. I was a bit unfortunate, actually. I got the text a bit too late, and Glenn Murray was actually in the studio, and I was gutted because I didn't get a chance to speak to him.
You know what? He usually does a Monday. So if you ever get the text for the UK Monday show, so that would be your Tuesday, then you should do it because Glenn's usually on that one. Or come on when I'm on, Steve. I'll make sure I get you on one day next season.
I did the Fan Zone after the United game at the weekend.
Brilliant.
Well, that's the first one I've done in a while, to be honest. But yeah, no, it's quite good. You know, and again, it's all about opinions. There's people on there that you don't agree with their opinion, and you think, "Damn, have they just watched the same game as I have?" Because I don't. You know, that's what it's like, isn't it? You know, you don't even agree sometimes with your mate who's standing on the terrace next door to you. So, you know.
One thing about watching the Fan Zone, it really does hammer home what a global game or a global presence the Premier League has. Jules, I just wanted to talk to you about when the Premier League went to India for their Fan Zone. Were you involved in that at all?
I wasn't, unfortunately. I was begging for a plane ticket, but I didn't quite get one. but no, it was mainly the kickoff team that went out there. So the Saturday kickoff show. So that was Seema, JJ, Don, Leroy, and that team, that they were the main team that went out there. So unfortunately, I wasn't involved in that. But seeing all the coverage was absolutely incredible. I mean, I know just from sitting in the studio and doing Fan Zone, just how huge the reach is of the kind of coverage that we make. And you kind of forget sometimes. You go into the studio and it's all very kind of like, okay, we're about to make a TV show here. And then you forget that people all around the world are watching, and it only really comes to life when you're on Fan Zone and you've got, you know, Steve in Australia who's calling, who's a Brighton fan, or then you've got, I don't know, Rob who's in India, or you've got Jason in Canada. And it's incredible, really, when you do a show and you get all these different fans, football fans, Premier League fans from all different corners of the globe. It's amazing. And for me, it's the weirdest experience I had was I had filmed the Fantasy Premier League show. We go live on a Thursday night. Mm-hmm. UK time Thursday, and the show goes on repeat on the Friday. So if you miss it live on the Thursday, then it gets repeated on a Friday. And last year I'd recorded the fantasy show on Thursday, and I flew to Dubai for a little mini break just to get some winter sun in November last year. And I got to Dubai on the Friday, went out on the Friday night, and I was in like a kind of beach bar, and they were showing the England game because it's when the friendlies were on.
Oh yeah.
Or the qualies were on. I can't remember what it was. And after the England game, on this massive screen, up came the Fantasy Premier League show with my face on it. And I thought, this is weird. I'm sat here and I'm also on the telly. Like, this is strange. And that was kind of the weirdest experience, because there were people kind of walking past going, hang on a minute, that's that girl on the telly, but she's actually sat in this bar. And I was like, yeah, I actually forget that, like, we actually go out in all these different countries. It's kind of crazy. And I've had mates that are on holiday in like Malaysia or the Seychelles, and they text me like, hey Jules, you're on telly. And I'm like, what, this is so weird. It is mad to think of it like that.
You say that, and early on in the season, a photo came my way that came through one of the Brighton Facebook pages. Somebody copied it and sent it to me. I don't know what page it was on, but it was a picture of me on the big screen in the sports bar in Tokyo.
Brilliant.
And they're going, there's a Brighton fan on the sports bar in Tokyo, and it's me. I'm going, really? You just don't realise that you're talking to the whole world, you know?
Yeah, it's excellent. It's crazy, really. What a huge reach the Premier League now has, and just how popular it's become literally everywhere.
It's strange, actually, because as a Brighton fan and, you know, watching Brighton for, 25, 30 years, you don't think anybody supports Brighton outside of Brighton. But now we're in the Premier League, you're getting fans who aren't from Brighton supporting Brighton. And I just watching the Premier League coverage in India, you've got all these really enthusiastic locals wearing Brighton tops, and it now happens all over the world. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Do you know what? That made me so proud, because I remember I was actually doing Fan Zone that day, and we had some live shots from in India, from Bengaluru, where the team were, and they were like, oh, we've got a bunch of Brighton fans. And I was like, no, you haven't. I was like, stop it. And then the camera panned across, and there was like about 30 Brighton fans all wearing the seagull strip. And I was like, oh my God. And I got a little bit emotional. I was like, this is so cool. Yeah. Like, because like you say, you know, especially when you've been born here and brought up here, I mean, I walk down the street and everyone's a Brighton fan. Do you know what I mean? You know, like everyone here in the city supports Brighton. And even if they don't support them, you know, they've got another Premier League team that they support. You know, they want to see them do well. So everyone's kind of like a Brighton fan here. And then to see Brighton fans abroad, it just kind of crazy, but it's amazing. I remember one of the first Brighton fans I had on Fan Zone was from India, I think. And, you know, I get sort of tweets on social media and messages on Instagram and stuff from people just saying like, oh, I'm a Brighton fan now. Like, I've loved seeing like what Chris Hughton's done. And I'm like, yay. It's just so nice. It's just nice that we have that appeal, and that, you know, people all around the world who have absolutely no association with this area actually want to support the club because they like the style of play. They like the manager. Mm. They like the players. And I just think it's great. It's amazing now that Brighton have got this reach from being in the Premier League and another season of it to come, which just fills me with so much excitement.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Steve probably feels the same here, because I know he wears his Brighton top quite a lot while he's out and about. And I tend to wear my strip quite a lot. And I feel really proud to be from, like, even though I've moved away and I've been away from Brighton for 7-8 years, I still very proud for being, you know, to tell people that I'm from Brighton, that I support Brighton. I always like to wear my kit out, you know, people ask me about it. And it is kind of nice to actually still feel part of it by wearing that kit, even though you're so far away. You feel the same, Steve?
Oh, I think we're probably more part of it here, obviously, with the supporters club. Mm. You know, that's got a huge reach from, you know, across Australia and New Zealand. And I like to feel that people in Australia and New Zealand do feel more part of it than, you know, maybe a couple of fans that are stuck out in the middle of nowhere that probably just watch everything on social media. We have got a good bunch of people down here. There's over 500 members now. And it's just crazy, really, when you think, you know, I started all this 8 years ago and we were sort of struggling. And it's grown into what it's grown into. It's just become like a runaway train. I keep emphasising that. And it's and we get people from all walks of life. And we do have, you know, born and bred Australians that have maybe their second generation family from Sussex or something, you know.
Mm.
And that's their connection. So they've picked the Albion and now they've really got into it. I mean, you see the people that post, you know, you can tell when the Australian guys are posting on there and you know, and that they are into it. There's no doubt about it. And I think, you know, obviously this season, Matt's had a lot to do with that. He's awoken the Australian public, probably the same with Moy at Huddersfield. And so the Australian public are looking out for those results now. Whereas, you know, if we didn't have Matt Ryan, a lot of that would probably go unnoticed. So it has sort of emphasised the Albion in Australia. But it's great, you know, we've got a good community down here. And, you know, most of the time everyone gets on and we say our opinions and, you know, get on with it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, we are getting towards the end. So, Jules, I just want to ask you a couple more things about Brighton. So what do you think Brighton need to do to stay in the Premier League for a second season? What should we be looking at doing this pre-season?
I think for me, the thing that I've been most disappointed by is our defending of set pieces. I mentioned it a bit earlier on. I think we've conceded the most goals from set pieces this season, which actually came as quite a surprise to me, considering that we do have quite a solid defence and that last year, you know, in the Championship, I know it's a completely different league and completely different style of play, but that's one of the things we were pretty good at. So I think that for me is something that we really need to work on. And I guess that's more of a tactical thing rather than a we need different players. I think that might just be a tactical thing. As well, I'm really intrigued by Lucardia because we've not seen quite enough of him yet this season. So I think that Izquierdo, when he came in, you know, he was gradually introduced into the team and now he's absolutely, for me, one of our starting 11.
Mm.
Whereas Lucardia, we've still not quite seen enough of him for me to go, all right, well, I think he should be starting ahead of Glenn or he should be playing here instead. Or, you know, so I think that it's hard to say because spending all that money that we did on Lucardia, I'd have liked to have seen him play a little bit more. I don't know whether there's a reason for that or whether Chris has just, you know, gone with the safe bet for now and kept the team as it was. But yeah, I would say improving on scoring goals, of course, that always has to happen. But whether that means getting someone else in or whether that means playing Lucardia in a different position or playing him with Glenn Murray, I'm not really sure what he's best at yet, if that makes sense. So it's hard to say, but I think both of those things for me are kind of the key areas, better at defending set pieces and, yeah, obviously scoring more goals.
Do you think Lucardia is worth a crack playing against Liverpool?
I do, actually. You know, we've got nothing to lose now. Obviously, if we can move up another place in the league, it means a bit more money to spend for next year. But at the same time, why not give it a go? Because, you know, the boys are going to have a bit of a break now before they come back for pre-season. And it would just be quite nice to see him, like I said a minute ago, just see him play a bit more. Mm. At the same time, you know, Liverpool have now got something to play for. So I think it's going to be a really tough game for us. I think that if Liverpool had secured top four before this last game of the season, then I think we could have maybe gone out there and been a bit more experimental. But Liverpool have now got something to play for. They're going to go out. I'm guessing Jurgen Klopp's probably going to play a full strength side because they've got still another couple of weeks until the Champions League final. So not too much of a risk of the players getting tired or, you know, hopefully no injuries for them. But yeah, I think it's going to be a hard game. It would be good to see Lacadia play. I say, why not?
Yeah, absolutely. And just finally, what would you say your outstanding moment of the season was? The highlight for you of the season?
Oh, you put me on the spot now. Probably, it's got to be... Oh, there's a couple, isn't there?
Cool. You can have a couple. You can have a couple if you need to.
Okay. I would say beating Arsenal at the Amex was one of the best days. That was unbelievable. I think I cried. beating Man United at home again, I mean, that was just unexpected. I think going into these last few games of the season, we were expecting to come away with no points, maybe one at best against Burnley. You know, I think that's what we were hoping for looking at the last four or five games. So beating Man United was just, again, an achievement that I just wasn't expecting. And then for me, watching live would have been that West Ham game away. First away win of the season. Izquierdo's goal. It just had me on my feet. I wanted to just clap forever. They'd probably be my three highlights, I'd say. And just as a general one, I'd say that month, Chris Hughton winning the Manager of the Month for me was a really proud moment, because he has done so much for this club, not just this season, but since he's come in, taking them from, you know, a place above the relegation zone to Premier League football and securing a second season. What he's done for the club and that month, him getting that recognition for it, definitely meant a lot.
Absolutely. Steve, your highlight?
I think that got Esquerdo's goal against West Ham, the team goal.
Yeah, that was Stoke, wasn't it?
Oh.
Wasn't it away at Stoke, that one?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that one. That was Stoke. Yeah.
That team goal, that was just had me off the sofa and jumping in the living room, you know? Because you weren't sort of expecting it. And I wish when they show it on YouTube or whatever, I wish they could just pan back a little bit further, because they just didn't get a touch of the ball. It left Matt Ryan's hands, and it reminded me very much of a goal years ago that Steve Perriman scored, where Tottenham had so many touches of the ball and it ended up in the back of the net. But, you know, I just wish we would play with a bit more of that freedom, because we're quite capable of doing it, but we just, sometimes we just, you know, I wouldn't say we go out to defend, but I think we're better off taking the game to the teams rather than sort of sitting back and letting them come to us.
Absolutely, yeah. I tell you what, I would say it was one of the most important points of the season was in the same game when Matt Ryan saved the penalty in the last minute against Stoke, and then Lewis Dunk cleaned out. I can't remember his name.
Charlie Adam.
That was it. I think that was a really, really important part of the season, because I think if we'd lost that, it would have given Stoke a bit more momentum. And it could have actually switched us around, because it was, I think it was in the thick of winter sometime. Was it before or after Christmas? It was around that time. But it was such an important moment. And being in the last minute, we were leading in that game. And it was a game we perhaps should have won. And to almost be close to losing it, if not from a brilliant save by Matt Ryan. And I do remember just Lewis Dunk going out and clean. Even he admitted that he thought it was a penalty. How he got away with that, I don't know.
Do you know what? I remember that moment so well, because it was another one of those 3 o'clock Premier League games on a Saturday when I was live on TV having to hold myself together. And I actually thought I was going to die. I was like sitting there like, what have I just witnessed? This is absolutely insane. My heart was racing so much. And yeah, that's got to be up there as well, for sure.
And also, of course, the following corner, Knockhart cleared off the line.
Yes. That last 5 minutes of that game were just outrageous. Like probably one of the best last kind of few moments of a match all season. And like you say, I think you're completely right there, actually, Richard, that if that game had gone the other way, Brighton's heads could have dropped, Stoke could have had momentum, and you never know what could have happened. And it was so vital that we just didn't concede that goal. So yeah, amazing moment.
Absolutely. Okay, Jules, awesome to speak to you on the Albion Roar Down Under today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a pleasure and so nice to connect with some Aussie fans that are Brighton fans. And I look forward to hopefully catching up with you guys when I'm over there in June.
You're listening to the Albion Roar Down Under, sponsored by Pure Media. Well, that's it for the season. Brighton have secured Premier League status again for another season. My thanks to our three guests today, Jules Breach, Matt Sparrow and Ben Thatcher. My thanks again to Steve for joining us on this podcast. Steve, it's been an interesting season. You have a few people to thank.
Yeah, well, I'd like to thank, obviously, everybody that's appeared on the Albion Roar Down Under, because, you know, when we first started this off, we didn't think we'd get the sort of caliber of guests we have got.
Or any listeners.
Or listeners, yeah. And also, obviously, like to thank AD and Alan for hosting the show for us on the Albion Roar back in the UK.
Thanks once again for listening, and we'll see you soon. Bye for now.